So I have a friend, and he happens to own an airplane, which is pretty cool. And when you have a friend that owns an airplane, here's what it means. You get to ride co-pilot sometimes. And on this particular day, we were flying, and like this happens all the time, right? Just flying, you know, chilling with my friend, flying his airplane. And actually, we were flying. It was a real cloudy, overcast day. And we came into the clouds, and it was just, I mean, it wasn't dark, but it was just, I mean, it was just in a fog. You could not see anything. And in a moment, boom, we bust out of the clouds, and guess what we see? I mean, the clearest blue sky you have ever seen. And in that moment, I'm just, wait, what? And he said, Mark, the sun is always shining. What matters is your perspective. So this morning, we're studying the book of Deuteronomy, and we're coming to the end of our study in Deuteronomy 31 through 34, in the last four chapters. And let me summarize the last four chapters and kind of bring this, make this connection here. Basically, here's what God says to Moses at the end. Moses, so you're going to die, and I'm not going to let you into the promised land. But actually, it gets worse than that, because all the things you've been teaching the people, teaching them my law, leading them to follow me, love me, making this, you know, I'm making this covenant with my people. Basically, none of them are going to listen to anything that I say or you say. They're going to forsake me in the covenant. And then in chapter 32, he writes a song. It's like 43 verses. It's like takes up a bunch of pages to get through this super long song. Chapter 33, Moses blesses the tribes. 34, he climbs this mountain overlooking the promised land and drops dead. All right, the weather forecast this morning of Deuteronomy, it's like cloudy skies, overcast. This is like, what is going on here? I mean, if you're standing in Deuteronomy, it looks like just, where's the sun? It's darkness. And so here's what we need this morning. What we need this morning is perspective. And what we have to remember is the book we are studying is like one chapter in a very long narrative that God is telling. We have to see the bigger story. And as we get up above the clouds, here's what we're going to find. We're going to see the most epic panoramic view of history and even the future. God's plan. And what we need is a new perspective. And I think Deuteronomy gives us a new perspective in three areas that we're going to talk about. So this is kind of where we're going this morning. We need a new perspective when we fail. We need a new perspective when people fail. And thirdly, we need a new perspective when it seems that God has failed. Okay, so if you have a Bible or a phone app, open it up to Deuteronomy 31. Here's the first thing we want to focus on is perspective when you fail. There's lots of failure going on in Deuteronomy 31 through 34. I want to focus on Moses for a minute. Look at chapter 31, verse 48. It says this, on that same day, the Lord told Moses, go up into the Abiram range to Mount Nebo in Moab across from Jericho and view Canaan, the land I am giving the Israelites as their own possession. There on the mountain that you have climbed, you will die and be gathered to your people, just as your brother Aaron died on Mount Hor and was gathered to his people. This is because both of you broke faith with me in the presence of the Israelites at the waters of Meribah, Kadesh, in the desert of Zin, and because you did not uphold my holiness among the Israelites. Therefore, you will see the land only from a distance. You will not enter the land I am giving to the people of Israel. So this is a story that happened. If you want to read the whole story, you can go back to Numbers 20 later. But basically, God's people are in the desert. They're wandering around. Moses and Aaron's sister, Miriam, had just died. The people are thirsty. They're dying of thirst. And so they come and they form a rebellion against Moses. And God says, Moses, don't worry, I'm going to show up and I'm going to bless the people with water in the desert. So these people deserve judgment. I'm going to give them grace. I'm going to show them my power. So I want you to go to this rock, speak to it, and water's just going to gush out. Well, guess what happens? Moses gathers the people, grabs his staff, and in a moment of anger and rage, he smacks this rock twice. And all of a sudden, water comes gushing out. And he's like, see what I did? See what I had to do for you guys? And he, in a moment of anger and rage and unbelief, steals away glory from God. God wanted his people to experience grace and glory, and what they get is Moses' rage and anger in the desert. Has this ever happened to you? Your anger gets the best of you? Maybe your frustration, your failure, your in a situation where you're supposed to be leading. Maybe you're a mom or a dad. Maybe you're an employer, a manager of some kind, a connection group leader, an elder, a pastor, right? And God's calling you to lead out of the Spirit and of love and joy, and you fail in the most critical hour. You know, most people on their deathbed, they wrestle with their failures in life as they reflect. And here we have Moses on his deathbed, on his death mountain. I guess it's more epic than a deathbed hospital room that we might experience. He's looking over the promised land on this mountain, and he's just, God reminds him of his own failure. A bitter reminder. So Moses died. Here's a question. What do you think God said to Moses when he stepped into eternity? His last conversation with Moses on the mountain before he died was, you failed, therefore I can't let you into the promised land. So what was his conversation with Moses right on the other side? If only we could hear that conversation between God and Moses. Here's what's crazy. We actually can, okay? We can hear that conversation. Look at Luke chapter 9. This is crazy. Luke 9, 28 through 31. It's going to come up on the screens. It says, about 8 days after Jesus said this, he took Peter, John, and James with him, and they went up on a mountain to pray. As he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became as bright as a flash of lightning. Two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared in glorious splendor, talking with Jesus. Okay, here's the scene. Jesus takes up his three closest friends, Peter, James, and John, up on this mountain. He rips off his humanity for a second, as it were, and reveals to them his glory. They see Jesus glorified. Peter talks about this in his epistle. He's like, we saw the glory of Jesus with our own eyes. We saw it on that mountain. And guess who shows up with them? Moses. Okay, Moses and Elijah, these are two important figures in the Old Testament, but Moses is there. And look at verse 31. What was their conversation? They spoke about his departure, okay, about Jesus' departure, which he was about to bring to fulfillment at Jerusalem. That word departure in Greek is the Greek word exodus. What was Jesus talking to Moses about? They were talking about his exodus. Moses, let's talk about the exodus that I'm about to experience. Not your exodus, not the one where you brought the people out of the, you parted the Red Sea and leaving Egypt, but my exodus, the one where I'm going to experience death and I'm going to conquer death on the cross. You thought the parting of the Red Sea was cool. Wait what is about and see what's about to happen. Just wait and see what I'm about to do. Here's the first point I want us to see. Perspective when you fail. Failure is only failure when you factor Jesus out of the equation. Failure is only failure when you factor Jesus out of the equation. I love it that Moses is talking with Jesus in glory. It's like, how did he get there? I mean, he wasn't good enough to enter the promised land, but now he's able to enter heaven, the presence of God. And I picture Moses dying and standing before God and wanting to continue the conversation about his failure. And he's standing before God and he expects to just see the Father shaking his head like, man, what a disappointment. I give you this task of leading my people and you just botch it. You know what I think the first words Moses heard when he stepped into eternity? Well done, my good and faithful servant. And I imagine Moses being like, wait, what are you talking about? Remember, I can't get in. I failed you. And he said, Moses, it's about my exodus. My exodus. My bringing people out of their slavery to sin. I conquered death. I conquered your failure. You know, I just think that some of us in this room are dealing with failure. This feeling of, man, I botched it big time. And I think that Jesus, if he could show up and show his glory this morning, he would come and he would have a conversation with you, the same one he had with Moses and Elijah and Peter, James, and John about his exodus. All of this points to the climax of history where Jesus Christ was crucified. He was buried in a tomb and he was raised from the dead. And the good news this morning is that I don't bring my righteousness into the presence of God. Jesus brings me his righteousness. That is the good news of the gospel, that you will not stand before God with all of your failures and even any of your righteousness. Isaiah says all your righteousness, it's like filthy rags before God. Like the very best things that we do are filthy rags compared to the purity of God's holiness. And that's the good news, is that the same gospel that saves us saved Moses. That's good news this morning. And I wonder if, you know, just by way of application to this point about perspective, is if this morning some of us just need to bring Jesus like our darkest hour. Bring him your failure. That's like the thing that on your deathbed you're going to be like, ah, but I failed. We talk about this all the time, how it's in fact our failure that qualifies us to be Christians, right? There are no perfect people in this room. Jesus is the only one. He's here, can't see him, but of all the people you can see, there's not a single perfect person in this room. And you know what? That means you are the perfect candidate to be here and experience the grace of God. We see that in Moses' life, but that's a perspective we see. Here's the second thing I want us to think about. Perspective, not just when we fail, but when people fail. Have people ever let you down? We see God making this amazing covenant with his people. We've talked about how Deuteronomy is all about this, like it's almost like a marriage between God and his people, this sacred covenant. And God's people fail miserably. So in chapter 31, God takes Moses and Joshua into this tent. Okay, Joshua is going to be the guy that's going to lead Israel after Moses dies. And basically what God tells Moses and Joshua in the tent is, all right, here it is. These guys, the Israelites are going to forsake me. They're going to reject the covenant. So here's what I want you to do. Moses, I want you to write a song. It's like a prophetic song that every time they sing it, the Israelites, it's going to remind them of the fact that they have broken this amazing covenant. Okay, so he writes this song. It's 43 verses. And we know why God would want him to write a song, right? You all know songs from the 80s or 90s or early 2000s, whatever your generation is, right? You remember songs. Like if I start singing a song, you're going to remember it. I was watching Guardians of the Galaxy 2 with some of my kids, and the song at the end, this Cheap Trick song, Mommy's all right, Daddy's all right, and I start singing it, and my kids are like, you know this song? I'm like, know this song? I was at the concert, dude. Cheap Trick, of course I know this. Like they're probably playing at state fairs now. You can go see them somewhere, but Cheap Trick, man. Of course I know that song. I can tell you all the lyrics to it. Well, God wanted his people to remember a song, and it's like 43 verses. You knew they had this down. I'm going to read this song to you. I actually practiced singing. I'm not going to do it because but it was like to the tune of that Cheap Trick song, and I was going to sing this whole like 32 in that. Do you want to hear it? No, you're not going to get it. You're not. You want it? You want it? All right. No, because I don't want to go viral in that way, all right? So that for another time. Chapter 32, verse 3, I will proclaim the name of the Lord. Oh, praise the greatness of our God. He is the rock. His works are perfect, and all his ways are just. A faithful God who does no wrong, upright and just is he. Isn't that beautiful? A faithful God who does no wrong. Now, you ready for whiplash? Verse 5. They are corrupt and not his children. To their shame, they are warped and a crooked generation. Between verse 4 and 5 is lodged the tension of the entire book of Deuteronomy. Right there, between God is faithful, does no wrong, and they are corrupt and not his children. Here's the tension of Deuteronomy. God is faithful, but his people are not. So who wins? God's faithfulness or people's unfaithfulness? Who wins? Here's what's crazy. We get to the book of Romans where Paul unpacks this whole mysterious gospel. It's one of the most beautiful books in the whole Bible. And he actually quotes from Moses' song. You ready for this? Look at Romans 10:19. He quotes chapter 32, 21. He says, again, I ask, did Israel not understand? First, Moses says, here it is, from Moses' song, I will make you envious by those who are not a nation. I will make you angry by a nation that has no understanding. And he explains this in Romans 11:11. He says, did they, Israel, stumble so as to fall beyond recovery? Not at all. Rather, because of their transgression. This is crazy. Listen to what he's saying. Because of Israel's transgression, because Israel abandoned the covenant, because of Israel's rejection of God, salvation has come to the Gentiles to make Israel envious. Now, this is crazy. This is so unfair for me to put up like just a couple verses from some of the most profound passages in the whole Bible, but here's the mystery that is between verses 4 and 5. Of Deuteronomy 32. God is faithful, the people are not. So what's God going to do? Here's the mystery. In some miraculous way, God uses Israel's rejection of him to accomplish his original purpose to bring the good news to every nation, every tribe, every tongue. And God is going to bring Israel back. So most ethnic Jewish people that you know, many of them, most of them, don't believe that Jesus is the Messiah, is the Son of God. Most don't believe that. And Paul's saying, what's up with that? Is God not faithful to his promise? And Moses says, absolutely, even their unbelief plays into the sovereign hand of God. That is so crazy. God is using even their rejection. We don't say, oh no, they didn't believe. They broke the covenant. What are we going to do? I just imagine God up in heaven like, my plans are ruined. I had this awesome covenant, this awesome relationship planned. It's like you spend your whole life planning for this wedding and you're finally about to make your vows. And all of a sudden your bride is like, oh, wait a minute, I don't want you. Or the groom just like walks out of the room. It's like, oh no, what are we gonna do? Moses failed. God's people failed. But God has a promise to keep. It's the original promise in Genesis 12 that God was going to use Abraham and his offspring to bless all the nations on earth. So in Revelation 5, we get the most beautiful picture of every tribe, tongue, nation represented before the throne of God. There's no white supremacist agenda that can stop God's agenda to bring the good news to every nation, tribe, language on earth. Even unbelief cannot stop the purpose of God. So here's a perspective when people fail, when people reject God. Here it is. God uses people, but he never depends on them. God uses people, but he never depends on them. God will accomplish his purposes. Moses' whole life work of leading and teaching the people and their rejection was only going to fulfill God's beautiful promise. And Jesus says, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not overcome it. Some of you and me certainly have this question sometimes where it's like, God, why? Why are you allowing this to happen? Maybe someone let you down. Maybe it was a parent. Maybe it was a pastor. Maybe it was a child. Maybe it was your church. Maybe it was a friend. Maybe death came too soon for that person. And why do the good die young? Or some way that you were hurt, or maybe wondering about your family, like, why, God? Why me? Why this? Maybe it's anxiety about the world. What? What is happening? I want to read one of my favorite verses in Deuteronomy 29. This is after Moses gives the law, and this beautiful verse in Deuteronomy 29:29. I always remember this because it's 29:29. It's easy. Like, you should remember this. Like, why, God? Why? Here it is. Here's why. The secret things belong to the Lord our God. The secret things. They belong to God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law. The law of God is easy to understand, but it is impossible to comprehend. And when Paul finishes Romans 11, he ends with just this worship to God. After exploring the depth of like, wait a minute, Israel rejected God and God uses that to bring all the Gentiles, that's us, non-Jews, into his family. And now God's gonna, in the future, bring Israel back. Like, what? A future that has not even been told yet and God's in charge of that, what? Moses says, yeah, the things revealed, this law of God, it belongs to you. Teach it, believe it. The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. You don't have to be an astrophysicist to understand this message. It's simple. It's right there. And you're going to ask questions that are bigger than what your 3.5-pound brain can figure out, right? Why? 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 And God says, trust me. The secret things belong to me. My encouragement to you by way of application to this point is to begin to pray with that perspective. God, the secret things belong to you. I don't understand this. Like, somebody has failed me. People have failed. Culture has failed. Whatever. Like, I don't get this, but I trust you. And maybe you need to stop and just give it to God, your why question, why, and give that secret thing back to the Lord. Well, the third and final perspective that we need, we've seen perspective when we fail, that failure is only failure when you factor Jesus out of the equation. We've seen the second point here, perspective when we fail, that God uses people, but he never depends on them. Like, he will accomplish his promise. And the third thing is perspective when God fails, or when it seems that God fails. I want you to see this, Deuteronomy 34, and this is how the book ends. Moses climbed Mount Nebo from the plains of Moab to the top of Pisgah, across from Jericho. There the Lord showed him the whole land. Then the Lord said to him, "This is the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob when I said, 'I will give it to your descendants.' I have let you see it with your eyes, but you will not cross over into it." And Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in Moab, as the Lord had said. Moses' life ends by looking out over the promised land. His whole life, he was saved. Remember? His mom put him in that little river. He ended up the prince of Egypt. He was driven out into the wilderness, came back through all the plagues. God used Moses to bring God's people through the Red Sea, saved them, rescued them, led them for 40 years in the wilderness, gives them this amazing covenant, and then walks up on the top of the mountain, looks at the promised land, and falls over dead. It's like the most disappointing ending I can imagine. Guys, what was Moses thinking once again as he stood looking over the promised land? Once again, we actually can see what he was thinking. Hebrews 11, I want you to see this. Hebrews 11, 13. It says all these people, he had just talked about Moses, these people of faith. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. He's talking about Moses here. This is exactly what's happening in Deuteronomy 34. Moses is looking, he's seeing the promised land from a distance. But he, like these guys, admitting he was a foreigner and a stranger on earth. 14, people who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Here's what Moses was thinking about. Not the promised land that was in front of him. He was thinking about the glory that he was to receive when he died. It says that in verse 16 of Hebrews 11, he was longing for a better country. He was never looking for just the promised land on earth. He was longing for a better country. Guys, I'm excited about a lot of things in the life of Veritas. I'm excited to get a building. I'm excited to continue to see God do more and more work. But guess what? I'm going to stand someday and walk into a new building. And guess what? None of us here, like, we're all excited for that, but that is not our hope. Right? That is not our hope. Moses, same thing. He's looking at the promised land. He's like, that's not my hope. That's not what I've been hoping for. Like, I'm on a pilgrimage to glory. I'm longing for a better country. Here's the perspective we need when God fails, because it seemed like God failed. You could see how Moses might think, man, God, like, I was supposed to get into the promised land. So disappointing. Here's the perspective when it seems that God fails. It's this. The arc of history bends toward resurrection. The arc of history bends toward resurrection, okay? I'm modifying the iconic words of Martin Luther King Jr. when he said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Guys, in a world without God, the arc of history bends nowhere, okay? It just bends, if anywhere, toward annihilation, right? There's no point, if there's no God, we're just random molecules, all that's left is survival. And guys, church, here is the best thing we have going for us. The best thing we have going for us this morning is that we believe that when we die, God will raise our corpse to life, to an inheritance that is incorruptible, imperishable. He says it's kept for us in heaven. It won't fade. It won't rust. No one can steal it. It's heaven. We have this hope. My question for you is, what are you hoping for? What is your hope this morning? And then my next question is, whatever that thing is that you're hoping for, it's like, oh, I hope to get a job, hope to get a really good job, hope to get married someday, hope to own an SUV and have it filled up with maybe pulling a boat, maybe some kids in the SUV, maybe a nice house, or maybe I'm hoping for a life of, like, serving people. Man, I'm going to bring clean water to remote places. I'm going to do some great things in this life. I'm going to go overseas. I'm going to tell people about Jesus. I'm going to go be a part of church plants. Next campus, I'm going to serve God. Man, there's a lot of things that I'm excited about, a lot of things I'm hoping for. But what do you do when all those things that you hope for, and you thought you were serving God, and you thought you were stepping out in faith, and all of a sudden, just disappointment. Like, oh yeah, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. That didn't happen, and here I am. Like, it didn't get married, or didn't get that job, or didn't get into that school, or got into that school, got to college, wasn't anything like I thought it was going to be. Maybe did get married, maybe couldn't have kids. Maybe we did have kids, maybe we lost a kid. Maybe we did have kids and my kids are lost, don't know Jesus, or maybe it's just disappointing. And what I want us to remember, this point, we have to come up out of the clouds and see from a different perspective. Church, if you know Jesus Christ, your life will end not just with death, but with a resurrection. And you will stand before God. And John says it this way, when we see him, we will be like him, for we will see him as he is. He will transform your body that is dying and decaying, and he will raise it up to new life. And what I want to tell you is, guys, we're pilgrims. We're just like Moses. We're going to experience disappointment if we're Christians. Maybe especially if you're a Christian, prepare to be disappointed in this life. This life is not our home. Peter says, we're strangers here. It says, Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there. Guys, remember Jesus himself endured a life of disappointment. I imagine people looking at Jesus on the cross and they're like, come on, save yourself, you're God. I imagine somebody looking at Jesus and like, oh, he was only 33. What a waste. Like, he healed my daughter. Oh, just too bad. There's still so many more sick people he could have healed, and he could have been such a great dynamic leader for our country, Israel, and there he is, just dying on that tree. And Jesus himself experienced disappointment and suffering. And Isaiah 53 prophesied about Jesus, and it said, he was a man of suffering. He was acquainted with sorrow. Jesus knew about disappointment, just like Moses, just like Elijah, just like John the Baptist, and just like every Christian that has ever walked on planet Earth. But all of them had their eyes fixed not on this life, but on the hope of resurrection. As we close our service, we remember that all of our disappointment finds its resolution in the resurrection. Guys, we don't talk about the resurrection often enough. We don't dream about heaven often enough. And this morning, we need to get up out of the clouds and we need to see where the sun is shining, church. We need to remember this hope. And so, band, you guys can come on up. And I want these verses to come up on the screen. And this verse is from Deuteronomy 33. And I want you to think about this as you walk up to the table to receive communion. If you are a follower of Jesus Christ, if you have trusted him, repented of sin, believed in him, we would invite you. You don't have to be a member of Veritas. You can come and to the tables. And the way we do this is we have these baskets with bread, which symbolizes the body of Christ that was broken for us. And we have the cup, which symbolizes the blood of Christ that was shed for us. And we do this in remembrance of Jesus Christ. We remember as we come that Jesus was a man of sorrows. He was acquainted with disappointment and suffering. But we remember that death could not hold Jesus in the grave. He was resurrected. And when he took communion, he said, I will not drink from this cup until we meet again in eternity. And so we also proclaim the resurrection of Christ. And this verse is going to be on the screen as the band plays, just to reflect the eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. Maybe as you're coming to the table, you just need a perspective, maybe on your own failure, maybe on the failure of other people, maybe on what seems like a disappointment with God. Like, maybe it seems God has failed. We come to the table and we just bring all that to the eternal God and remember that underneath are his everlasting arms. And so we just come and we do this in remembrance of him. Let's pray together and just go into an attitude of prayer and communion. Just in this quiet, create some space in your heart. Turn your attention to Jesus. Maybe as you come to the table, you remember your own failure, like Moses. Maybe you come and you're just overwhelmed and you're just coming to the table. And you're coming to give your sin, to repent of your sin, to confess your sin. And in exchange, Jesus gives you his righteousness. And he pours out his grace into your soul. Let's just turn our attention to the cross of Christ. Let's do this in remembrance of him.